Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. In these disunited states today, people are hungry for laughs. Over the last decade, the demand for stand-up comedy has tripled. According to Bloomberg, the industry that grossed $371 million in ticket sales in 2012 was closing in on nearly $1 billion in 2023 and may have surpassed that figure since. Audiences are searching for laughs in live venues and on streaming services, and in terms of live venues, not all of them are what you would consider traditional. This growth is happening nationally, and it's happening here, from secret shows and pop-up shows in underutilized spaces to clubs designed for comedy. Charlotte has embraced the trend. So we're going to explore this with three people who know this industry well. Jason Alan King is a comedian, actor, writer, and coach, and holds the distinction of the first comedian to play the stage at the newly revitalized Carolina Theater. He did it last night in a special soft opening preview, and you were hysterically funny. Congratulations.
Mike, that means a lot. Thank you very much. I'm very proud to be there, very grateful. So thanks.
Cale Evans is also an actor, a coach, and improviser, and founder of Queen City Comedy. He joins us along with James Gagan, who is a talent buyer and director of programming at both the Comedy Club at Duckworth's and the D.C. Comedy Loft in Washington, D.C. Welcome to you both. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
James, let me start with you. As a person who helped build comedy venues over the last decade and a half, what is driving this rising interest, this rising demand for comedy?
Well, I think part of it is the want for escapism, and part of it is the growth of social media really has really put a spotlight on talent you wouldn't have seen in comedy before, where really before, unless you were on a hit TV show or something like that, you really weren't a known entity. And now I wouldn't say easier, but you're able to grow your audience in a different way than you were before. And that's really just helped the growth of comedy, especially over the last 10 years. And having been involved on more of the business side of it, I've seen just in things that I've done a growth of almost 250% over the last 8, 9, 10 years. Wow. And just the revenues that come in.
If the demand for comedy is rising, that means the venues are either multiplying or stuffing themselves with people every night.
Right.
It also, I would think, Jason, means that there are more comedians coming into the pipeline, either as a stand-up or as a comedy joke writer, or is that the case?
Yeah, if you're asking me, Mike, yeah, definitely that is the case. I think that, and I think that's a good thing. There's a lot of new comics who see it and you want to do it and you think you can do it. You've had friends tell you that you can do it. And then, you know, you take the plunge, you try it out. And there's a lot of ways to do that. One is just a free fall, dive in, start doing open mics, try your hand. Another way is, you know, take a comedy class. And there's a lot, I teach a comedy class here in Charlotte. There's a couple other folks who do as well, Lauren Ansley and Don Garrett. And, you know, we have pretty full classes. So there's a lot of people who are seeing it and want to try it. I mean, I have people who come through who they say they've been, you know, watching it since Johnny Carson, and they just always wanted to do it. And I think it's out there so much now, they're like, all right, I'm going to dive in. I'll try it out. And it's brave and it's fun to see. It's a really, really fun thing.
And it's not just a rising interest in stand-up and a rising interest both to be a stand-up comedian, but also to watch stand-up. There's a rising interest in sketch comedy, in improvisational comedy. Cale, and you're a coach in that area. How would you compare the level of interest between stand-up and improvisation?
Well, all the smart people really love to do improv, and the hacks go into stand-up. It's been my experience. No, I don't think audiences care. Like, they want to come and have a good time and laugh. But the definitely there's performers. There's a lot of people that, you know, could never stand up on their own behind a microphone and speak, but they don't mind getting on a stage and making stuff up with a group of like-minded funny people. So
I could be really wrong about this, but it seems to me that most stand-up is probably written out in advance and rehearsed and planned and honed and edited and reshaped, and so that the punchline is where it needs to be, et cetera, and the tempo of the whole routine is where it needs to be. But improvisation, it's like skating on ice, it seems to me.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a different muscle and a different art form. It's created here in the U.S. like jazz, so it is somewhat different. But I think audiences, it's like watching someone watch a tightrope, right? They're on your side. They want you to be successful, but because they know that at any moment it could go south. Whereas when they watch Jason, they're like, tell us your funny jokes, man. We paid money to hear your best, so give it to us.
Yeah, they sit back with their arms crossed. Go ahead, be funny.
Yeah, and Jason always delivers. In improv, when you mess it up, it's almost as much fun as when you get something a little bit clever and then the audience is like, oh man, that was a little bit clever and it could have been a disaster. So I think they give us some grace.
I take it, Jason, that we have recovered from the pandemic. The pandemic shut everything down. I don't know how you guys made a living for the time that we were closed, but how would you compare the economic health of comedy and comedy clubs and the venues that you play today versus before the pandemic?
Yeah, that's definitely the tale of sort of two lives, right? The pandemic was devastating. And I know James can definitely kind of jump in on this too. It was devastating, I'm sure, from the comedy club perspective. And you know, the idea was, it felt like a week of time where I was getting calls and emails from every show that I had, and they were just like, we're not doing it, we're done. And then you just were twiddling your thumbs going, well, how long does this go? How do I make money? Where do I can't even go outside. So it was a trying time. You know, before the pandemic, it felt alive and things were really humming. Pandemic shut it down. But I think where we're at now is, I almost want to say that it's even stronger, maybe. I do think the pandemic and the idea of social media and how people have really sort of embraced that has reinvigorated, I think, audiences as much as comics. So for me, it feels like comedy is really humming right now.
And James, yeah, you've helped build comedy clubs over the years. What's your take on that?
I think that's true. I mean, I think going into the pandemic, you really were already seeing the rise of comedy a little bit because of social media and things like that. And then obviously a lot of comedy clubs did pivot to trying to do digital things, trying to keep us comedy relevant, keep your venue relevant. And then coming out of the pandemic, people were so hungry to see live performance and to see the people they've seen on TikTok and Instagram and Facebook that it's really just exploded the industry in general. And it's really just been fantastic to see. And it's led for so many opportunities that weren't there prior, really.
Now, I mentioned that you're the director of programming at two different clubs, the Comedy Club at Duckworth here in Charlotte and also the DC Comedy Loft in Washington. You've chosen two button-down cities to work in the world of comedy. are they buttoned down? Is either city buttoned down? And if so, does certain kind of comedy, do certain jokes play differently in those two cities or differently when you go from city to city to city?
Yeah, I do think that there is, when you go from market to market, there is going to be a variation of what does well and what doesn't. I think Charlotte and DC are really similar in audience, that it, a little bit smarter comedy does tend to do well. Where in some more outbound markets, it wouldn't necessarily be that way, where you are looking for a different style, maybe something a little more mainstream or a little edgier, as opposed to a little bit on the smarter end of things. And I've been very lucky that in the markets I have done shows in, that a lot of it translates market to market fairly easily, because DC's, even though obviously there's a size difference, the quality of the audience that comes in is really fairly similar.
Is comedy in Washington more or less political than elsewhere?
Oh, it's much more, especially in the local scene, because obviously it's right there. I mean, you are
ticked off right now in the local scene.
Yeah, there's a lot of they won't be able to. Campers, but
they won't be able to afford to go to a comedy club much longer. So they have to get their yucks in now.
Jason, that is fair.
Jason, you travel the country playing shows. Are audiences different? Do you find them to be different in different areas of the country, or because of social media and because of all these Netflix comedy specials, has it become homogenized?
I definitely think audiences are different. Like, so I was just in Florida doing shows down there, and it was a smaller town or whatever. And I just, without question, think that that audience and their sensibilities are going to be different than Charlotte or DC. That's just the reality of it. But I also think that it is kind of homogenized at the same time, depending on where you go, where if, you know, people are consuming comedy 24 hours a day practically now. So, you know, if you see someone you like, you go there, and like-minded people who like the same thing go there. So it's a little bit of both, I would say. But I think even more than that is, as a comic, you go to whatever the venue is and you assess what's there, what do they look like, who, you know, what do you hear, what's the, you know, what's the hum of the crowd. I mean, those things are on a sort of micro level. You got to pay attention to where you are too, and then kind of make adjustments at that.
Kale, comedy is a two-way street. You don't do it in a vacuum. You require audience reaction, and some nights mm-hmm. you get more than other nights, I suppose. And I have found that some nights something that you know will get a laugh doesn't, or things that you don't think are funny at all, the audience goes crazy, and you can't explain it. And I'm sure that's the same is true. With improv, and it can change night after night, or it can change one show to the other if you're doing a two-show night. Have you found that to be true, and can you explain it?
Yeah, it's easy to blame the audience. You see a lot of comedians that are like, man, mom, that audience was terrible. It had nothing to do with me. But I think it is. It's exactly what Jason said. Like, a good performer, the audience is part of it. And I think that's why so many people are hungry. As great as streaming is, and as great as a way to get comedy, sitting in a room with other people that are laughing at the same thing you're laughing at is, you can't replace it. And I think a lot of people that make their way on social media have a tough time transitioning to live, because it is very different when you can edit something and, you know, perfect it, versus when I'm literally, like, in improv, we say the audience will tell you what's working, right? Yeah. And so... Being able to read that and use it, yeah.
The audience is part of the show. They affect your timing, it would seem to me. And that can change night to night, moment to moment. And so you've got to be prepared. You got to be on your toes. You can't do it the same way you did it in the last show, because it's not going to work necessarily. I want to hear from all three of you about this. How would you describe Charlotte as a comedy town? What do audiences want here? What do they find funny? I'll start with Jason, because he's the stand-up.
Yeah, I mean, I've been trying to figure it out, to be perfectly honest. What is the audience? Who are they? I'm not sure I have a great answer. I think, James, you're sort of mentioning a smarter comedy, I think, maybe works a little bit better as opposed to stuff that's super blue. But it's hard to say because of all the different venues. You know, you've got brewery shows, you've got pop-up shows that, to me, aren't the same people who necessarily go to the Comedy Zone. So I really am hard pressed to really put my finger on exactly what the, you know, who they are, because Charlotte's also a town where people come from all over the place. And to me, that's exciting. I think it's all a good thing. I think if you're just like, nope, we're a super conservative town, or we're super, you know, liberal, you know, Asheville town, I think the idea that it's a little hard to figure it out, or to, you know, you have all these different people, there's some challenges, but I also think that's a good thing. You know, I think it's an opportunity for all different kinds of comedy to succeed here, I think.
I want to hear from Kale and James about this, because they have a different point of view, and they have different skills here. But we'll have to do that after the break, because we have to take a break. Jason Allen King is with us. He's the last voice you heard. He's a comedian and the host of the Zoning Out podcast. Kale Evans with us, also a comedian and an actor and an improviser. And James Gagan is a talent buyer. She books these comedians. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte. Using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about comedy tonight. today, this morning, with the three people involved in this in the industry. Jason Alan King is a stand-up comedian, an actor, a writer, a coach. He's the host of the Zoning Out podcast, which is sponsored by the Comedy Zone. Cale Evans is with us, actor, improviser. I want to say, always want to say improviser. Improviser, coach, and the founder of the Queen City Comedy Organization. And James Gagan is a talent buyer and director of programming at the Comedy Club at Duckworth's and the DC Comedy Loft. We were asking Jason before the break how you would describe Charlotte as a comedy town. What audiences here want? What do they seem to find funny? Cale, I'll come to you next on that.
Yeah, I think it is. Charlotte is finding its cultural and artistic identity. And I think this is true for comedy the same way it's true for a lot of the arts, whether it's theater or symphony or whatever else. There's a huge appetite, but not necessarily a focus on developing local, right? So we tend to see some people that are following who their favorite is, but a lot of people that are just looking for something to do out and about. They're looking for some relief because they just listened to Mike Collins talk about taxes and layoffs, and they want something to come and and something to laugh about. But a lot of performers, I think, feel the need to go to Nashville or Atlanta or the bigger ones, New York and L.A., once they get to a certain level if they're going to do this professionally.
James, since you book in two different cities, how would you characterize us?
Well, I think since the venue I book in Charlotte is fairly new, we only opened in January, we've kind of taken the approach of let's book a really diverse slate of shows, the headliners, everything from very blue to more urban to mainstream and smart, just to see what works. And so far, everything has been really gotten a really great reaction. So far, I mean, Charlotte really has embraced a very diverse lineup of shows that we have booked. So it's been very pleasant surprise because we just weren't sure exactly what to expect from the market, which is, it's been an incredible reaction so far.
I guess comedy started on large stages in vaudeville, if you want to talk about that, and then moved to the Catskills and moved to comedy clubs and the Tonight Show with Carson. He put comedy on the map, to be honest. There are other hosts of the Tonight Show, but no one did it quite like he did it, or did for comedians quite what he did for comedians. But venues have suddenly become any place, any space, anywhere. In Charlotte, comedy clubs are performed in theater spaces. They're performed in clubs. They're performed in sandwich shops, galleries, parking garages, I read yesterday. How does that impact, Jason, both the performer, the comedian, and the audience?
Well, I think for comedians, I think the impact is more rooms means more stage time, which is all we want. We just want to perform. And I feel very comfortable saying that about comedians. Like, we just want to, where can I go? Where can I perform? Get me on stage. So pop-up shows and performing at a candle shop in Southend, sure. Is there a microphone? Awesome. Great. I don't even care if the lights are on, you know? And there's just this whole, you know, group of people who a lot of them have never been to some of the clubs that are around here. They don't care. Also, the pop-up shows are kind of like, you're in on something. So that's kind of exciting. But put me on it doesn't matter. We just want the stage time.
You know there was I've forgotten the name of the TV show, but there was a TV show where one of the characters was a waiter in a sandwich shop, and he did stand up in the sandwich shop very unsuccessfully. Nobody wanted to hear it. Nobody cared. Nobody laughed. There was sometimes one person at one table, and that was it. But the idea of that was very funny. But I would think it's not funny, James, for the performer. So is this a Charlotte thing, or is this a nationwide trend where these comedians are taking the stage such as they are in weird places?
Oh, no, I think it's a nationwide trend. I really do. I mean, you see it in D.C., you've seen it in Nashville, and not even in smaller cities like Knoxville, where there's not necessarily an established club. You see a lot of these pop-up shows occurring in just random venues. Like you said, in parking garages, you see it all over the place.
Why?
Well, I think part of it is people are hungry, and I think part of it is it's a neat concept of a show can occur anywhere as long as there's a quality of talent to put on stage.
Can I add?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I think we saw the same thing. Like in the 80s, there was a real comedy boom. And so you saw restaurants in every place. Just as the demand increased, comedy's a really easy thing to put up somewhere. And so until places like the comedy room at Duckworth's opens up, like these other places work just fine. So I think it's an indicator that we'll see like more and more official traditional places. But I think we're seeing a similar boom as we saw in the 80s.
Kale, you co-produced the Queen City Comedy Experience in cooperation with the Comedy Zone and Blumenthal Performing Arts, I think, last year, and it went on for 11 days with 19 shows and 115 acts. Will it be back this year? That's my first question.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, this year we're doing three separate festivals
And
instead of just one.
how is this experience for the audience different from what they can get at comedy clubs all over town, and even at the Blumenthal, because they bring in comedians.
Yeah, it started as a for the community, like let's bring all the local folks together for a weekend and improv and comedy and sketch and music in the same place, which had really not happened before. In Comedy Zone, we asked them like, "Hey, we're thinking about doing this thing. Will you help support?" They were a huge supporter. Blumenthal saw what we were doing and said, "Hey, would you like to do it at our space next year?" And we said, "Yeah." And so with Comedy Zone and Blumenthal's support, we were able to get big acts like Nate Bargatze and Sebastian Maniscalco and Brian Regan, Weird Al Yankovic. And we were still including the local acts as part of that. So the idea is we're going to bring the big names, and people are going to come because they love them, and they're going to discover their favorite new local performer while they're there.
Jason, does comedy breed comedy? In other words, if you have more opportunities to see, more opportunities to perform, more comedians developing, is it like a snowball rolling downhill in a
I
way?
think exactly that. Yeah, I think the more you see it, the more you want to do it. The more people, the cream rises to the top. You challenge one another. You see someone that who's great, you want to be as good as them. So yeah, I think that's definitely the case. And the more diversity you see in comedy, I think the better comedy will get. More different voices and things like that. I think you nailed it.
I think this is interesting because I think television and HBO and streaming services have put a big dent in theatrical motion pictures. People would stay home and watch it on their 65-inch high-definition television rather than go and have their feet stick to the floor in a venue where people might be talking during the movie. Comedy, however, is kind of like that in a way. It's accessible, James, 24/7. There are a plethora of comedy specials by big name comedians who have finely honed their sets for these hour long and 90-minute specials in preparation for the taping. So you have that opportunity to see comedy, but then you have local performers in local venues competing with that. Do those opportunities on television help or hurt local comedy?
I think it helps because the more people see and consume more comedy, it creates a hunger to see things they can't see necessarily on those specific streaming platforms. Like if somebody has a Netflix special, you've most likely seen their act that they're touring with, at least in the year before that. But you haven't seen a lot of these locals. And it's also, again, going back to social media, where that's a lot of ways locals can get their stuff out is they can build a local following and get their clips out is when they record their sets and get audience reaction and hone their skills as comedy continues to grow its audience base.
And that's my next question, because this has always interested me. Back in the day, before these comedians were on television on a regular basis, you could have the same act for years and just go from city to city, club to club, and do the same act. I used to know vaudeville, I'm old, so I used to know vaudeville comedians, and they would come back to the same place every year and do the same act, and the audience would laugh at the same jokes, and that was great. But now you do it on television, that's over. You've done it once, it's on tape forever. Now what? Is it making it more difficult, Jason, to be a comedian? You have to keep it fresh.
I think difficult might not be the right word. I think keeping it fresh is the key, right? To me, it's like a shark. The minute I stop writing new material, I'm probably done. I I think the idea, and I, you know, it's just, that's what the game is. So I don't know if I, you know, I'm going to burn an entire sort of, you know, 30 or 45 minutes and never do that again, at least where I'm at. But you do want to keep it fresh. You do want to keep injecting new, you know, new experiences that you've had, turning into material. So you're having some turnover, at least where I'm at in my career. I'm not writing a brand new 30. I am expanding on jokes that I have. So there's this constant sort of redeveloping of the material. And as you get better, you perform jokes differently. And it's a really a constantly evolving thing, in my opinion.
Cale, everything today is becoming more and more expensive, and we have a lot of events in Charlotte of all kinds, from sports to comedy, all competing for what little expendable income the rest of us seem to have, the dwindling amount of expendable income that we have. What does the average comedy experience in Charlotte cost?
Local could be, there's plenty of opportunities to see it for free, right? There's lots of open mics and places where you could go and see, you know, maybe the next top star, if you're willing to sit through a couple of clunkers. Or you can see 10, 15, 20 bucks. You could see a well-established local comedian or improv team. And it'd be great. It'd be perfect.
You were smiling broadly, Jason, when he was talking about you might see a little gemstone if you want to sit through a couple of clunkers first. Is that part of the fun, seeing people bomb? Is that part of the fun?
It's not fun to do it. It's fun to see. That's the thing about comics. You know, there's nothing funnier than seeing a close comedian friend just eat it on stage. It's hysterical to me because they laugh when I do. So I always think of more of a free show and you know, sitting through open mics. I think open mics are great and important, but know what you're getting into.
In comedy clubs, I guess the price can often be more because of covers and minimums. They got to sell drinks, in fairness, otherwise that they won't stay in business. But there's a group called Don't Tell Comedy, and they are in 200 cities, I'm told, around the world, and Charlotte is one of the largest markets in which they operate in terms of sales. They credit their success to their low ticket prices and the unique, unconventional approach without cover charges and minimums. Is that the secret to their success, James, or is this part of a larger trend toward entertainment or providing audiences more than just the show, providing them an experience that goes along with it?
I think a lot of it has to do more with the experiences being provided than necessarily a cheaper ticket, because really comparable to any other local show, they're in the same ballpark of. So I don't think it's that. I also think they've also got the unique concept where everything's a pop-up as opposed to you're going to a more established venue or space. So I think it adds a uniqueness to it, where you don't always know exactly where that show is going to be until when they announce after you've already purchased a ticket, and that adds to the experience of it. And I think it's a really neat spin of how they've gone about that, where it could be in somebody's backyard. It could be in a candle shop. It could be anywhere.
Jason, not only are you a comedian, you're an actor, but when you're an actor, you're doing somebody else's material. So if it doesn't work, well, you've done your best. It's not, you didn't write it, but as a comedian, you did. And performers have to do what they do because they have to really want to do it because they're putting themselves on the line. It's all hanging out there in front of others every time they step on a stage. And I've heard successful comedians talk about how they started, how they suffered through experiences of bombing, and you've kind of alluded to this, but also how the laughs get them energized. They might have bombed at the 9 o'clock show, but at the 11 o'clock show, something clicked. And they want to go, as soon as it's over, they want to go back out there and do it again. It's like a drug. It's an adrenaline rush. How would you describe it? How do you understand it? Because you experience it.
Yeah, I think the idea that it's a drug is 100% true. I think, you know, whether you've done well or not, if you've done any time on stage, you come off, there is definitely an after show buzz that you will have for the rest of the night. That is 100% true. It's just right in the vein. Just I keep going back. You know, half the time I walk off stage, you're right. I could go right back on. It is as unique a feeling to have, especially if you do well. It's wild. And I experienced it early on. I took a comedy class And I remember, you know, a couple weeks in, I started doing open mics, and it was this, my whole world opened up. I said, this is a very, very different, unique experience. I wasn't a performer. I was a writer trying, you know, trying to be a better sort of joke writer. Then I got on stage, and then it's been all downhill since then, Mike.
Kale, everybody
it's
has
more of a bad addiction than a good one, you know.
Yeah, downhill till the Carolina Theater opening. Great, yeah.
That's right, yeah. First comedian there. Your name's going on a plaque. Kale, everybody has to start somewhere. There has to be a first-time performance, whether it's a stand-up comedian or whether it's somebody participating in an improv situation. What is the best way for a person to start?
Well, absolutely the best way is to do it. And I think there's more opportunities now than ever. Before the pandemic, there was maybe one open mic night a week in town. And now any night of the week, you can find not only at least one, multiple. There's also, Jason mentioned that he and a couple others do stand-up classes. There used to be one improv theater in town, and now there's three schools. So taking a class, if that's kind of the best way forward.
How do you teach comedy? I mean, how do you teach it? Is it presentation? Is it style? Is it rhythm? Is it the joke writing itself? And when it comes to improv, that's going to be different every time you do it with every different group of people that you do it with. How do you teach it?
Go ahead, Kale.
No, you could, Jason.
I think for me, I, you know, I'm always real sheepish about teaching because, you know, what have I done? Who am I? But one thing I am, I'm a very good cheerleader. And sometimes just being supportive of saying, hey, you can do it. Provide a little bit of joke structure that people maybe haven't realized that they've been hearing that. Show them what that is. And then, you know, take some of your life experiences and observations and plug that in. And then it's like, you know, get on stage and, you know, their mic is shaking and they're, you know, and I'm just there, a cheerleader going, you can do it, just practice. We got, you know, you got this kind of a thing. That's how I do it from someone who's starting from zero. Adds a little bit of support. I think that goes a long way.
Yeah, it's more of a Sherpa than a teacher, right? You're introducing them to it. You're helping them work on the techniques and the exercise, the muscles, giving them some feedback, which is very important, especially in the early days.
We have to take a break. We're going to come back with more. I want to follow up on how you teach improv, because aside from yes and, that's the only rule that I know. Maybe that's the only rule that there is. I don't know. But we'll talk about that with Kale Evans, who teaches all this and is the founder of the Queen City Comedy Organization. Jason Allen King's a comedian, and James Gagan is a talent buyer. We're going to come right back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about comedy, which is extremely healthy in this country today. And the same is true of Charlotte, with growing numbers of venues and bigger audiences and obviously a growing number of people involved in performing and producing and writing it. Kale Evans is with us. He is the coach and founder of Queen City Comedy. And improv has been getting a lot of attention in recent years. There were a series of television shows that were on TV not too long ago that were all based on improvisation. The Groundlings organization in L.A., Second City in Chicago have all produced remarkable talents who've gone on to perform in places like Saturday Night Live. Aside from that yes and response, which allows you to be open to whatever comes next and whatever you're doing improvisationally speaking, what must a person in this kind of comedy possess to be good at it?
Yeah, I think what's unique about improv is it's not just me standing up and creating something, making it up on the spot. We're doing it together, which is even tougher, right? We're both have to be on the same page. So collaboration is a huge piece of it. How do I read what I think you're looking for, where you're going to go next, and how do we understand each other? So that's where the training and the practice, which, you know, when I see my wife's face when I say I'm going to improv practice, she's like, I don't know what that is, but it's vitally important. And in addition to yes and building on what people offer, there's no mistakes, only discoveries. There's having each other's back and pitching in when we think things are going south. All concepts that we use all the time in improv. And honestly, I use a lot in my corporate life doing leadership skills, because I think a lot of those skills cross over as well.
How do you know when the bit's over?
When the audience will tell you. You listen to the audience. And I always describe it's like popcorn, right? You want to, maybe I could have gotten another more kernels popped, but we don't want burnt popcorn. So we want to go out on a high, like end while the audience is really like, man, I wish I could have had some more. Because ending after the audience is like, yeah, we were done with that is the worst.
You know, James, everybody wants to see Seinfeld or Dave Chappelle or Chris Rock or Wanda Sykes or Sarah Silverman or Amy Schumer. They're big draws, big names, and they're fabulous at what they do. But people also turn out for unknown comedians and talents, often mixed up with maybe some semi-known comedians with brand newcomers who are just taking the stage early on. What's the draw there as opposed to a big name?
I think part of it is, especially if you're a more established venue, it's have you built a trust in a brand that people are going to trust to come to these other shows? And part of it is also, if they've come to a show, let's say they've seen, I'm just trying to pull a name out of my hat, Dave Chappelle, when they saw one of the openers, they're also coming back to headline. They enjoyed that act. They may come back to see that individual, to see those opening or more localized acts too. And I think there's a lot of tie-in to both ways of doing it. So whether you're a more established brand or a more established venue, or if you're somebody who is just getting the reps in town and somebody just comes across you and then wants to see more of your act, and they'll go to shows, other shows that you're on.
Jason, they tell actors when they're auditioning that they, in the back of their mind, they should keep in mind that the people on the other side of the table watching the audition want you to be good, because then their job is over. They can just cast you and move on with their lives. Is part of that at work with comedy? When you step out on that stage, does the audience, are they with you? Do they want you to be good? Or do you have to prove something to them first?
I think you have to prove something. I think, you know, it's not that they're rooting against you, but it's a little bit more of a challenge, kind of a little bit like, I dare you to be funny. And that's why I think, you know, looking at Steve Martin's masterclass that I've watched a number of times, it's like, it's brilliant. He says the first thing out of your mouth should be a joke. And I think that's just good performance etiquette. But also, if you can rattle off a couple quick jokes, and the audience will then gain confidence that, okay, we're in good hands. You know, this is a professional that already got him going. And I think, you know, you've already sort of, you kind of got them on your side, because at that point they want you to do well. That
yeah. Makes sense. James, as somebody who sees a lot of talent and books a lot of talent, how do you know when you have an up and comer, how do you know when they're ready to move to something bigger?
Well, I think a lot of it is seeing how they've done in front of something other than, because a lot of people, when they're doing open mics, they go to the same open mics and sit in front of the same people. And putting that performer in front of different audiences and seeing if they're developing and change the subtle ways they kind of develop through that, that's when you know if they're ready to move up to like a host doing 5 to 10 minutes, is ready to go to 20 minutes, or somebody's ready to do that 30, 45 minute headlining or closing spot. And you just being able to see them put in the reps and put in more work and work in front of a different variety of people, that's really a key. Otherwise, if you're putting them up in front of the same audience every single time, they may not necessarily be developing in the same way.
Mikhail, both you and Jason are coaches. You work with up and coming comedians and help them hone their material and their acts and help them, I guess, with their stage presence, because some people are very funny and they write funny, but they don't know how to put it forth on a stage. How, when you work with somebody, I'll ask you both this question. When you work with somebody, how do you know that they have the right stuff, and how do you know when they're ready for that first stage performance? Kale.
Yeah, I think it's, their attitude and their approach to it. It's the confidence, I think, that you're reading more than the actual technique or anything. Are they willing to just like really put themselves out there to fail? and do it in a big way, then you know that you can teach some of the other pieces, the technique and everything. It's that confidence that you're looking for, which is the odd part is a lot of people come to improv classes to build confidence. So it's a little bit, which chicken or the egg?
Jason?
Yeah, I don't know if they're, sometimes they're not ready. You know, the show doesn't, you know, start because you're ready. It starts because it's at 11 o'clock. at least for my class, it's kind of like, you are going to get out of this what you put into it, work very hard, right? And I'll, you know, and sometimes I think you're ready in so much that you have the confidence to get on stage and do it. And if you can be okay with maybe not having the best show or whatever, but you still love the process and love the experience, you'll keep doing it.
Comedy used to be almost exclusively populated by men. Women were a rarity, and women were once told by men, of course, that women aren't funny. That's proven to be absolutely incorrect. So I'm wondering, as women have become more prominent in the field of comedy, are more women wanting to get into it? Are they getting into it? Are you seeing more women on the road?
Is this a question for me, Mike?
Yeah, go ahead. Take it, Jason.
I'm happy to jump in. I'm happy to jump in because, this is something that I sort of like to say that I champion quite a bit, and that is, if we want the best of anything, the idea of keeping one group out, it flies in the face of that. And I think, you know, anyone who said that women aren't funny are probably have a lot of their own issues and lack of confidence. I think that there are brilliant female comedians, women comedians, all over the place. And yes, I'm seeing a lot more women get involved. And I think, my fingers are crossed, but I do think we're more accepting now of women being a part of stand-up. And I think the more women who do perform stand-up, the more women will follow and come to do it. There's no scenario where that's not good for comedy, women in society, honestly. Let's absolutely get them involved, because frankly, I think a show with all guys, a little bit boring to me. You know, it's like, can I have a different voice? Can I have a different perspective? Also, the room is probably full of half women. Like, what? Just the idea. It's never made much sense to me. I'm a bit of a soapbox on this one, but.
and James, it used to be that women had to do a certain kind of comedy. They can only tell certain jokes. If you watch these comedy specials now on Netflix, the women are telling jokes that men used to tell, and nobody even thought twice about it. But it's like, whoa, she's out there. So are there things that men can do that women can't, and vice versa? Or is that all gone now? Can women do anything?
I really think we're getting to the point where that's gone. I think just the diversity in voices in comedy, and as comedy continues to grow, it only benefits us that you are getting all these different perspectives where women can have similar jokes and viewpoints as men. And it should not be a shock factor necessarily. It's just good for comedy. If it's a well-done joke, it doesn't matter who it's coming from, as long as it's well done and it's getting the laughs. That's what we're here for. We're not here for if this is a man or a woman, ideally, or if they're a part of a certain community. We're here to laugh and enjoy the experience. And at the end of the day, that's what should matter more than anything else.
What makes a person funny, Cale?
That's a great question. I think there's multiple things, and people are funny in different ways, right? My dad loves a good joke and loves to structure a joke, but my mom will just say whatever's on the top of her mind. And so I'd like to think that somewhere I got the best parts of both of those approaches. And I think part of what people love about the community is hanging out with other funny people. And so if you could film and package the discussion after the show, like at the bar, it's funnier than the show in most cases.
The show after the show is always better. That's true with this program and every other thing I've ever been involved in. I don't know what that's all about, but that is true. What topics seem to be funny that maybe weren't funny before, or topics that used to be funny no longer land? Where are we going with that? Is that an easy, hard question to answer, or an easy question to answer, Jason?
Yeah.
I assume that there's some, some things are cyclical. I mean, there's a lot more political sort of conversations happening now than there than there have been. And it's obviously touchy subjects. And, you know, guys like Cliff Cash, who are, you know, it's almost like it's a they're trying to burn it down. And I mean that in a good way. He's doing really big things, and he's turning his shows into protests and, you know, things like that. So those are those things I'm definitely seeing being popular. I think it'd be hard to not add crowd work as a big thing that's happening right now. And I think that's partially social media, but I think audiences are getting used to seeing it and kind of want it a little bit, for better or worse.
When you say crowd, when you say crowd work, what do you mean?
It's you know, a comedian who intentionally or not intentionally begins to interact with the crowd, whether it's asking them, you know, loaded questions or just random questions, and trying to have some sort of conversation, right, during the show. And I think the benefits of that are the whole audience now feels like they're experiencing something. It feels fresh. This has never happened before.
Right.
And there are comedy purists and maybe just other fans who feel like it's not the best kind of stand-up, not the best kind of comedy. You know, I'm a joke writer. I prefer a well-written, well-crafted joke to that. Although I do some crowd work. It's, you know, I think if you can do the whole array of it, then you're successful.
And stand-ups have to be prepared for whatever hits them, because audiences have become more interactive. They think they're in their living room, and they'll talk back to you and not necessarily heckle you, but they will contribute to the routine. We live in a very divided country right now, and one of Carson's big deals was that he kind of steered clear of politics while also commenting on the political situation of the day. Now we have comedians late night that are really taking one side. Very few take the other, but one side over the other. When comedians don't avoid politics, when they tackle it head on, are they getting heckled? And which side of the aisle is touchier? Who can answer that? James, you book comedy in Washington, for crying out loud. Talk about that.
So especially in DC, obviously more liberal comedy does really well. I guess that's just the nature of that market, where you can have conservative comics come in, but you just don't get the same, you both either ticket sale reaction or just general audience reaction. And I think in terms of which is more touchy, I think when you get to the extremes, it's about the same. And when you get to the really far left or the really far left, right. But I do think you'll get more of a visceral reaction sometimes from somebody who's on the far right, especially in DC, because they do sometimes feel like a minority voice in that market where it is so heavily left leaning. That's going to vary market to market, depending on, like, it just happens to be DC, such a left leaning, far to the left leaning market. And then Charlotte is more, a little bit more, I guess, a purple market, or a little bit more of a moderate market than that, where you can have voices on both sides.
People do tend to speak out more than they used to in audiences, even though they're not being invited to. And sometimes they actually do heckle. So what is the best way to handle a heckler? You got a routine. It's like a script. They're interrupting you. What's the best way to deal with that, Jason?
Most of the time people are just being, they're talking too loud or they're a little drunk or whatever. I literally never heard someone say, boo, get off the stage. Like, that kind of thing doesn't happen. So with that in mind, I always try to handle it professionally. I go stand near where the sound is, so they feel like I'm right on top of them. And sometimes it's like, hey, you guys okay? You guys need more drinks? What's happening at this table? You know what I mean? I never want to attack, because the audience as a group will then turn on me.
Is that true? Because I have 1 minute left, but I've read a quote from you that you said you like to crush hecklers so they never even consider attending.
Did I say that? I may have said that.
Last night at the Carolina Theater.
Was your last night at the Carolina Theater. Yeah, right. They say that if you do what you love, you'll never work a day in your life. They also say if you do what you love, you'll never make any money. So you got to love comedy to do it. Can you make a living at it in 10 seconds or less? Jason.
If you love it, you can. That's simple.
Okay. Yeah.
Fortune Feimster, Matt Rife, there's plenty of examples of people in Charlotte that came from the Charlotte market that are super successful, huge.
James.
Yes, I think it's a distinct possibility as long as you get the reps in.
James Gagan books talent into the comedy club at Duckworth's and the DC Comedy Loft. Kay Levins is an actor, improviser, coach, and founder of the Queen City Comedy Organization. And Jason Alan King is a comedian.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. Our producer is Chris Jones. We have additional production help from Jesse Steinmetz. For more information on Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.